the point here is that if you go, oh God, I'm, you know, 60 something and I haven't been eating the right stuff, it's never too late. The human body is phenomenally resilient. And what people just don't get is every single thing in your body, your eyes, your bones, you know, your brains are made directly from food. So you change your food. Of course, it's not just about food, but you change your food and you change everything.
That is the voice of Patrick Holford, who pioneers a new approach to health and nutrition. Food, he says, is a key part of decreasing risk of Alzheimer's. This is the Liz R Wellbeing Show, the podcast helping us all have a better second half. I'm Liz Earle, and I'm sure, as you know by now, it is my mission to find ways for all of us to thrive in later life by investing in our health and our well-being today. Will we or won't we be affected by a disease that takes away our cognitive function? The prospect is really terrifying, and the numbers are increasing and the rates are soaring at an alarming rate. Well, Patrick is the founder of the Institute for Optimum Nutrition, Europe's leading training centre for nutritional therapists, and is the chief executive of the Food for the Brain Foundation. He has authored over 30 books, and I have to say, we have known each other for over 30 years. And his latest book is Upgrade Your Brain, truly his life's work, bringing together years of research in optimum nutrition or functional medicine, as latter-day people have started to call it. And he offers some revolutionary advice about dementia prevention. He is launching Alzheimer's Prevention Day on May the 15th with a website, alzheimersprevention.info. And that works out what is driving your future risk and, importantly, what you can do about it. I have to say, I've known Patrick, as I say, for many decades. He is a true trailblazer. So I am really looking forward to this conversation, particularly asking the question, Alzheimer's, is it an inevitable part of aging or a preventable disease?
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Well, welcome, Patrick. We last saw each other on a beach in Kenya.
We did. It's so good to be talking with you since we are both in the better second half.
We are, truly. And I'm gunning for 120, so I'm just over halfway there. How about you?
Yeah, something like that. And a friend of mine just came back from Okinawa and was telling me what fun they had with all these lively, highly active, intelligent and bright, you know, people in their hundreds.
Yeah. Okinawa, of course, being one of the so-called blue zones. Mm-hmm. And all about community, mental health, you know, which we'll talk about, good diet, quality of life, and actually having a sense of purpose, I think, which is sort of also hugely important in this whole conversation.
Well, it's so very true. And as you sort of proposed in the question, Alzheimer's is not an inevitable consequence of aging. It's actually a disease, and nor is it all in the genes. And that means we can largely prevent it. And by the way, those are not my words. Those are the words of the second in charge of Oxford Medical School, now retired, Professor David Smith.
Extraordinary. And, you know, I remember talking to you back in the day, and it is well over 30 years ago. I mean, it's pushing even 40 years ago. I don't know how long ago it was that you founded the Institute for Optimum Nutrition.
In the 80s, 84, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I remember coming to see you in Fulham, you know, and getting to know you then when it was all so new. And you were, even then, you were talking about eating for the brain and having brain food and having amazing supplements, you know, but before anybody was really taking supplements and talking about how we might be nutrient deficient. So you have been a real leader. And I guess now, am I right in thinking that, you know, from general nutrition and awareness of, you know, we are what we eat largely, or certainly what we absorb, then moving that on to look at the brain in particular and look at cognitive decline, dementia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, these brain diseases. Is that kind of your new, you're waving the flag, well, and a trailblazer in that area?
Yes, but it sort of happened from two major directions. The first was I was working with Professor David Smith at Oxford. And in 2010, he did a study, which is absolute landmark importance, because what he did was to take people with pre-dementia, we call it mild cognitive impairment, and give them either a dummy pill, placebo, or a high-dose B vitamin, B6, folate, and B12. And B12 is really important because something like half of everyone over 65 has insufficient B12 in their bloodstream, not necessarily in their diet. It's in meat, fish, eggs, milk, but in their bloodstream. In other words, we don't absorb it so well. That's why it sometimes gets injected.
Interesting.
And I was there when he broke the code of the trial, and basically found 53% less shrinkage in the brain on the B vitamins. And at the time,
over half, that's extraordinary.
Well, yeah, just to put this in context, and I want to tell you about a very important discovery that's been made in the last few years, which is that the B vitamins don't work without omega-3, and omega-3 doesn't work without the B vitamins. And when that factor was factored in, they didn't give omega-3, but they looked at those in the top third of omega-3 in their blood in the trial, they had 73% less shrinkage in 1 year. And that brought them down to the level of shrinkage you get with no memory loss at all. In other words, there are only two hallmarks of Alzheimer's, ultimately, only two diagnostic points. One is a loss in cognitive function, which, by the way, we can measure changes at least 30 years before a diagnosis. And the other is brain shrinkage. So if you if you stop cognitive function and you stop brain shrinkage, you've stopped the disease. And to put this even more into context, that, you know, the latest drug trial, donanemab, it had almost 20% more brain shrinkage compared to placebo a year.
What? And that is horrifying. And of course, no drug trial is going to happen with, you know, big pharma if you're looking purely at a non-patentable nutrient.
Well, no. And indeed, the pharma guys came to Professor David Smith and said, if we could patent this, it's a multi-billion dollar drug, but we can't because the B vitamins are 10p and the drug treatments are, you know, upwards of £40,000 a year. And so that was like kind of awakening number one. But awakening number two, it sounds terribly arrogant, but having studied heart disease and diabetes and et cetera, it became clear to me what we need to do to not have these diseases. So the issue really was, how do we do prevention? Mm-hmm. And I really thought long and hard about this and realized that Alzheimer's is quite unique because basically you end up with holes in your brain. So you can't reverse it once you've got holes in your brain. You can maybe get a little bit of improvement if you start early enough. But once you've got, you know, advanced Alzheimer's, there's sort of no going back. So, and then I watched it because I started 10 years a campaign called Alzheimer's is Preventable when people thought I was crazy. You know, how could you say that? And by the way, and we should cover this off at some point, less than 1% is caused by genes.
Gosh.
So I thought, you know, now it's becoming the number one healthcare cost, which it is, almost the number one killer. It is certainly in many countries, and it's the number one fear. Yes. So, you know, there's all this energy on the possibility of me getting this. So how do I prevent it? And what was fascinating for me as well, which is a fundamental principle of optimum nutrition and the institute that we started, and the B12 is a classic example, is this oxymoron that if you eat a well-balanced diet, you get all the nutrients you need. And we know with B12, you can't do that. And what actually happened in David Smith's trial was he measured something in the blood, which we do in our charity from a home test kit called homocysteine. And it is a marker of risk. It tells you you're not getting enough B vitamins. It's very easily lowered by having the B vitamins. So in other words, we get into the area of sort of personalization, that we're not all exactly the same. So don't ask me if you need to supplement B vitamins. Ask your body, measure your homocysteine. And then, of course, I know you'll cover this in your book. Recent paper showed that homocysteine is a biomarker for over 100 diseases.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not just a marker for that. I mean, there's nothing else that is, not cholesterol, not blood sugar, not anything. It is actually causing Alzheimer's. In other words, if you lower the homocysteine, you stop the brain shrinkage, you improve the cognitive function, and that is the definition of something that actually is causal. So those two things got me. If I really push hard on Alzheimer's prevention, because of course, as we'll talk about, every single thing that helps to prevent Alzheimer's also helps to prevent aging, diabetes, cancer, heart disease, and everything else.
Yeah.
So let's put the arrow on Alzheimer's and wake up as many people to the idea that you are the architect of your own brain's future. You do not need to lose your mind.
I mean, there is just so much in what you have just said in that last kind of chunk. Bottom line, I mean, I guess I'm racing ahead here, but I always like to kind of cut to the quick. If we have large doses of B12 with our omega-3s in the diet, are we therefore then protected from cognitive decline?
Massively. And I'll give you two examples of this. National Institute of Health in the US did a very, very big study of all studies on Alzheimer's prevention. And what they look at is what we call the population attributable risk. To what extent is this risk factor important? And they attributed 22% of the risk, almost a quarter, to raised homocysteine, e.g. lack of B vitamins, principally B12, and 22% to lack of seafood and lack of omega-3.
Gosh.
And so those two alone are going to certainly, you know, cut your risk by at least a third. And what's now happened in a study in Holland and Sweden and England and also in China is the extraordinary discovery, and I can tell you exactly why it's interesting, is that the omega-3 trials that have failed, failed in the people who were low in B vitamins. So, for example, in Sweden, they went back to the study that gave omega-3, didn't work.
Yeah.
They then looked at the blood samples at the beginning of the study, and they split them into the third with the lower homocysteine, which means good B vitamins, third higher, and they found, oh my God, in the third with a lower homocysteine, in other words, sufficient B vitamins, it worked fantastically. And another study, which didn't fail, but it wasn't brilliant on B vitamins, again, they went back, looked at the omega-3 levels. And so we have actually found out that omega-3 and B vitamins are codependent. It's a little bit like if you give a builder a hammer, do you get a house? No. You give them a bag of nails, you get a house? No. But if you give them a hammer and a bag of nails, you get a house.
Yes.
So we've underestimated those two factors, which could be up to half of the problem. The third, I just want to mention these because I call them the four horsemen of the mental health apocalypse, is sugar and your blood sugar. Some people call Alzheimer's diabetes type 3.
Yes, I've heard that.
It can be for some. So the sugar factor is big, and that's why diabetes is a big driver for dementia. And then the fourth really is to do with antioxidants and that whole area of fruit, veg, herbs, spices. Smoking is a risk factor. Pollution is a risk factor. Those are both generating oxidants.
So one of the things that is increasingly concerning me, and I do cover this in my book, at the risk of having rocks thrown at me, is the rise of veganism and plant-based diets. And presumably, you know, the two key nutrients that you've highlighted there, B12, only available widely in animal produce. You know, you've got nutritional yeast, but that's, you have to take that as a supplement. And omega-3s, again, you know, fish, seafood, etc.
Yes.
Or grass-fed beef. You know, what's your view on this? Because as we eat less, we're encouraged, governmental policy is you know, eat more plant-based, you know, fake food and ultra-processed convenience food made out of plants. Presumably, our B12 and our omega-3 levels are plummeting even more. How are we going to reverse this trend?
Well,
I mean, this is potentially catastrophic news.
It really is. And I have to just sort of give you a little story which really unpacks this so beautifully. A about 10 years ago, they discovered near where I live in Wales, in the Gower Peninsula, the oldest complete Homo sapiens remains. And this skeleton had all this jewelry, beautiful jewelry made out of shells. So,
amazing.
So they assumed it was a woman. It was called Paviland Woman. But actually, when they did the analysis on DNA and bone, they discovered it was a man.
Gosh.
And the normal story, which is, you know, quite wrong, is to say, oh, they will have been wandering around plains with spears catching antelope. When they analyzed the bones, they discovered that about one quarter of the diet was seafood, marine food.
Mm.
And there's an extraordinary thing here. You see, you know, we split from the chimpanzees and gorillas some 6.5 million years ago. Their brain size stayed the same. So a chimpanzee has a 380-gram brain, let's say.
Mm.
Our brain size peaked 30,000 years ago at around 1,700-gram brain. So what changed? Because it wasn't the genes. You know, we're only 1.2%
right.
difference in our genes. What changed? It had to be the conditions of existence, the environment in which we exploited. And it had to be a wetland, swampland, river's edge, estuary environment, which I have absolutely no doubt is how we became upright, wading in water. It's why
Gosh.
It's why we have this layer of subcutaneous fat that we don't want.
Right.
My daughter just had our fifth grandchild.
Oh, congratulations.
And there we saw at the birth the vernix, the waxy, white, waterproof stuff.
Yes.
And David Attenborough
said... Of course,
said,
waterproof.
Yeah,
yes.
Exactly. David Attenborough said, I have never seen a vernix on a land-based mammal. I wonder if it exists in the marine mammals like seals, etc. And a marine biologist in Canada, French Canada, picked up on this. We have biologically, biochemically, the exact same vernix as marine mammals. In other words, we were moving into the sea. But the point about Paviland Woman in the Gower is they will have been expending, honestly, three times the calories we do, at least double.
Yes.
Because, you know, you had to
yes.
walk and fish and, you know, whatever.
You carry stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah,
chop
yeah.
wood, etc. So if a quarter of their diet was marine food, the amount that we would need to eat today to even get close to that omega-3 and B12 and all the minerals in seafood and what we call phospholipids, which are very, very rich,
yes.
and they're only in eggs or fish, half of our entire diet would be seafood. So if you are completely plant-based.
Half?
Yeah, half. So,
oh my gosh.
But the point about this is that the reason we call the Institute for Optimum Nutrition is to look at what is that optimum intake. And I was having a lovely chat with a man who used to be in charge of the American Navy's mental health psychiatrist, Dr. Joe Hiblin. And he gives his patients, depressed patients, not one serving of fish a day, which is about a gram. He gives them 4 grams of omega-3 and says not only do they feel extraordinarily contented, you know, they come out of their depression, but they have really good skin and they report much better sex.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, that's a no-brainer then, isn't it?
Exactly.
It's like,
so
how much? So, and is this, are we talking about EPA and DHA here?
Well, yeah, because omega-3 fish oils contains EPA, which is terribly good for your mood.
Mm-hmm.
And the DHA is what actually builds your brain. And what's sort of fascinating is, I mean, there are 30 risk factors now that we know of for Alzheimer's, from cataracts to hearing loss to not exercising to pollution to, you know, sugar, diabetes, all sorts of things, you know, head injuries and so on.
Yeah.
And actually, you can understand all of these if you understand three things: structure of the brain, the function of the brain, and the utilization of it. And what happens is those brain cells are actually made of omega-3 DHA, which has to bind to phospholipids rich in eggs and fish. And the binding is done by B vitamins. And that's why you actually need all three. So
all three.
If you don't have omega-3, and for example, I mean, chia and flax won't do it because only about 5% you know, convert. Walnuts, I love these foods. I eat them, but they're not enough.
They're not enough.
No. And if you don't eat eggs and you don't eat fish,
Yeah, you're really going to struggle.
And to illustrate that, my dear friend, Professor Michael Crawford, and he's a wonderful example, by the way.
Yes.
He's 93.
I was going to say, I remember him from years and years ago. And he's still going, is he?
Oh, he's not only going, but there's a vital thing that no one has ever been able to explain, a phenomena, and that is, how does the photon energy that hits our eye turn so precisely into the image of you or me in color, accurate? And he's worked it out at the age of 93. It's a terribly important paper.
Really?
It's all done in quantum physics. I have to tell you the lovely story of my first teacher, a genius psychiatrist in charge of mental institutions in Canada, Dr. Abram Hoffer. And he was on my scientific advisory board right up to the end. 2 weeks before his death, he stopped seeing patients. At the age of mid-90s. And 4 days before his death, he said, I'm not feeling very well. Two days before he checked into the local hospital, had no disease as such. And his organs just shut down, no pain, at peace, no drugs, 2 weeks off work in his
mid-90s. Oh, that's the way, isn't it?
These people were late to the game.
Yes.
We're lucky.
Well, hopefully with all of us now and with all the knowledge that's happening. I'm sure there'll be a lot of people listening here, you know, like me, midlife and later. I know a lot of my audience is much later too, thinking, oh my gosh, I've been plant-based, or I actually don't eat very much fish, or I don't supplement with B12. You know, have I missed the boat? Can we rewire or reconfigure our brains now?
Well,
is it too late?
No, definitely. I mean, to give an example, there was a man who in December was diagnosed with mixed dementia, which means Alzheimer's and vascular dementia, which tend to go together, and that they make up about 80 to 90% of all dementia. Dementia, by the way, is diagnosed from a cognitive function test, while Alzheimer's can only be diagnosed if you also have a scan of the central area of the brain. That scan was developed by Professor David Smith's team at Oxford University. So this fellow is, you know, mixed dementia, Alzheimer's vascular. His wife, Dorothy, asked, what can we do? And they said nothing. Went on to the web, found our charity, foodforthebrain.org, where you can do a free cognitive function test.
Oh, I'm going to be right on that, I tell you. And we'll make sure that we put that everywhere so everybody knows where to find you.
And we have 100 people a day doing it. And it's accurate. It's actually what they do in memory clinics, but digitized. And we've proven it to be fantastic. Then you get a questionnaire. Then it works out what's driving your risk. And then you join something called the Cognition Program, which tells you what to do about it. So this fellow and his wife, because he had got to the point where he couldn't find the loo at night in his own house. He couldn't conceive of time in the sense of tomorrow. He couldn't plant out his garden. He couldn't talk and eat at the same time. And within 4 months of following everything, and they really did everything, And we'll break down some of those examples.
Yes, definitely, please.
He's planted his entire garden. He's back. Oh. He's back on the computer, and honestly, he's probably a little bit late in the process, and you know, it may gradually decline. But the point here is that if you go, oh God, I'm 60 something, and I haven't been eating the right stuff, it's never too late. The human body is phenomenally resilient. And what people just don't get is every single thing in your body, your eyes, your bones, you know, your brains are made directly from food.
Yes.
So you change your food. Of course, it's not just about food, but you change your food and you change everything. And one thing that really struck me the other day, I was looking at a statistic which said the average woman in the EU is going to spend the last 14 years of their life unable to climb 10 stairs.
Oh, please, no.
So when people hear that, they think, oh my God, I really must keep my muscles strong. I must do some toning exercises. I must use my body. And we probably think, okay, that's not a disease. You know, it's not a natural process of aging. Those people in Okinawa are jumping around the place and doing that.
They are running up hillsides.
Exactly. Yeah. So we understand that loss of muscle mass is purely a function of what we do in our lifestyle. Exactly the same is true with your brain. You are the architect of your brain's future health. And if you want to have a healthy brain, you've got to start now thinking seriously about prevention.
But encouraging that we can reverse. I mean, well, one of the things that we hear quite a lot about is the deposits of amyloid plaque in the brains of those with Alzheimer's. And that seems to be linked to this glycation, which is linked to sugar, as you mentioned earlier. But are you saying that that's potentially not as significant as we might have thought?
No, I think it's a red herring. And we see there are two things that do exist in the brain of not all, but most with Alzheimer's. One is you find these deposits of this amyloid, call it a toxic protein. And two, you find these tangles of nerves called neurofibrillary tangles, which are related to something called p-tau, T-A-U, not Dow, tau. And they exist in the same way that, you know, I suppose my analogy is a bit like tooth decay. You know, if someone's got tooth decay, you will find plaque on their teeth.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, removing the plaque might help a bit, but is it the cause of tooth decay?
Right.
No.
Yes.
The cause is eating sugar. So, you know, that's the cause, really.
Yeah.
But the trouble is that when we say we already know how to stop brain shrinkage, we already know how to reverse that cognitive decline, but it's things that a person does and it's things that are not patentable. There's really no...
Indeed.
There's no drug in it. So what happened, I mean, to be honest, Professor David Smith, among others, just says it's unethical to continue. In the last two trials of these anti-amyloid injections, they had seven deaths.
I mean...
You know, they had over 30% got brain bleeding and swelling. And no one got better. There was just a tiny bit of less worse. And last month, they announced a £10 million trial to measure in 5,000 people blood test of p-tau. Why? So you can test everyone, a bit like cholesterol, and say, oh, you're heading in the wrong direction. Maybe we've got a drug for it. But the point is, we already know how to identify who's at risk. Go to foodforthebrain.org, do the cognitive function test.
Yes.
We already know. And then what we've done, which is super cool recently, is we've developed a home test kit. So one prick of blood from a kit we'll send you measures your homocysteine for the B vitamins, measures your omega-3 index so you can actually know whether you're getting enough or need to eat more fish or supplements. Measure your vitamin D, which is terribly important.
Yes, yes.
And measure the absolute top marker for blood sugar, which is called HbA1c or glycosylated hemoglobin. It's what doctors use to see if you're heading towards diabetes. So we can actually measure where you're at and then help you to reverse that whole process. And
that's absolutely fantastic.
We're cruising towards having tested, not on the blood test, but on the cognitive function test, 500,000 people. We're up to 410,000 people now.
That's extraordinary. What's your relationship? Because this is a charity that's doing it. What's your relationship with other charities, other Alzheimer charities? And I know there does seem to be a bit of a revolving door between charities and pharmaceutical drug companies who support various charities.
Well, no, that is very true. There was a big meeting recently of a new dementia flight path. So there's a thing called the Geller Commission to how do we address dementia? And I was asked in the audience, you know, given the chance to ask a question. And I said, I've got two. And I had made the point that, you know, this is a preventable disease and only 1% is in the genes. And I told the story of, well, the first thing I said to the head of Alzheimer's Society, a lovely lady called Kate, is that given that we know that at least half the risk is preventable, I would argue 90%, but at least half, everyone agrees that, should we not ring fence half of all research money for prevention? Right.
Mm.
And she was on the panel, said, yeah, you know, makes very good sense. And I said, how much have you got? And she said, 6 million. And then I told the story of the B vitamins and the omega-3. And what we desperately need is a proper randomized placebo-controlled trial long enough, giving both the B vitamins and omega-3. There's one of Britain's top neurologists, Professor Peter Garrett, has been trying for 7 years now to get the money. He was on the panel. So I turned to him and I said, you know, what is the single most important thing we could do to really establish prevention? And he said, this trial has to be done. And I said, how much would it cost? And he said, 3 million. So I turned to Kate.
And said, there you are.
Sorted. She came up to me afterwards and said, we don't actually do anything on prevention. We've passed that over to Alzheimer's Research UK. They're the ones who are doing this big study. I went to them. They say 5% on prevention. But by the way, giving a drug that lowers amyloid would be considered prevention, right? So, you know, probably a fraction of that is on diet or lifestyle. And then I went to the third, Dementia UK, who were very, very friendly. And they said, we don't do prevention at all, but maybe you can do, you know, prevention for us because we actually take care of the carers. So I think it's, I call it the lemdemic, you know. Here we are with a mountain of lemmings trying to raise money to do lemming research. We're waiting for a cure, which will never happen because it's to do with the breakdown in structure. The function is the supply of fuel, you know, like sugar, and all the exhaust fumes like oxidants. And then you've got to use it, which is if you can't see and you can't hear, you have less utilization. There is, it's a system. There's nowhere in there where you can intervene and give a drug. So there never will be a drug cure for this disease. It's not like that. So do we wait for the cure or, and then in my lemdemic, as I call it, there's a couple of radical lemmings at the top of the cliff putting up a big sign that says, don't jump.
Don't jump. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Patrick, let's pause here. When we come back, I really want to get into the details of the kind of diet that we should be eating now and how practically we can prevent cognitive decline.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters, May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
So I'm still kind of reeling from the lack of research and funding that's going into prevention, because we know that prevention is always so much better than cure, unless, of course, you're a drug company, in which case that doesn't work as an algorithm. But there are obviously these things that we can do to be preventative. So let's talk about what kind of diet we should be eating. You know, we know that the brain is mostly fat.
Yes.
Does that mean that we should be feeding it with more fat in the diet? I mean, as you know, I'm, as I suspect you are, passionately anti-low fat and you know, hardened trans fats and all the rest of it. You know, is saturated fat something that's good for the brain?
Yeah, well, there are eight we can break this down into 8 things that you can do that prevent not only Alzheimer's, but any brain-related problem, any depression, and so on. And the first we call brain fats. And you do not need to have a low-fat diet, but we want to focus a bit more on omega-3 friendly, you know, foods, you know, such as fish. Olive oil is good too. We're great with, you know, walnuts and pecans and all that sort of stuff. And the brain fats includes phospholipids, so love eggs. You know, eggs are really important.
Where else do we get phospholipids from? You mentioned fish and eggs. Seafood.
Fish and eggs.
Supposing you don't eat those, is there a supplement?
It's actually choline, a phospholipid
called
phosphatidyl choline. And there's a little bit in broccoli. There's a little bit in almonds. If you're vegan for any particular reason, lecithin granules or lecithin capsules, very inexpensive. Two of them will give you lots of phospholipids.
Right.
So that's your sort of, you know, I mean, that's what I do.
Where does lecithin come from?
It's actually from soya. So it's
okay. So that's a vegan source.
It's a vegan source. Absolutely fine. Yep. So I take lecithin every day and I eat oily fish. And I have at least 6 eggs a week. I'm just about to get my own chickens.
And excellent. I miss my chickens. I had them on my farm. And I'm next to a farm where they have chickens. And I do walk up to the farm gate and buy their eggs. But, you know, eggs for me are such a superfood.
No, they really are. And what we're doing down here at the Forest Barn Retreat is we're actually measuring how to grow food, including chickens and eggs, with the highest level of nutrients. And it's all down into the microbiome of the soil and everything. So in a couple of years,
indeed,
I'm going to actually, because, you know, my friend who's helping us, Dan Kittredge from the BioNutrient Institute, he finds a 40-fold variation in the nutrients in foods.
So, really? I mean, would that apply to eggs? I mean, could eggs be so different?
They certainly
could. One to another.
I mean, I met a few years ago Dr. Miriam Stoppard, and she said, I don't take supplements. I have a Brazil nut every day. Gives me my selenium, right?
Yeah.
So I just looked up studies on, a really, really good study on Brazil nuts. There's a 20-fold variation in the selenium content of Brazil nuts.
Yeah, depending on the soil that they're grown in. I mean, it's fairly obvious,
and
isn't
the acidity of the soil makes a difference as well. So this idea that if you just eat a well-balanced diet, you get everything is very far off the mark. So I supplement every day lecithin. I supplement omega-3, rich in both DHA and EPA. In the winter, I always take vitamin D, 3,000 IUs.
Yes, same.
And I measure my blood because the omega-3 index, which is a very simple blood measure, is generally in Japan about 10%. And you want to be above 8%. In the UK, it's about 4%. And by the way, we didn't say that there are less than 5% of children in Britain who even eat the basic level of omega-3. Yes. Less than 5%.
I can believe that. I absolutely can believe that. Or maybe they're eating a bit of tuna and then getting a huge amount of mercury. So, I mean, the whole thing is slightly fraught. On the fish oils, do you go for a fish oil supplement or do you like krill?
I go for a fish oil supplement. Nothing wrong with krill. You just have to take more.
Yes.
Basically.
I personally like krill because it's got the astaxanthin in it.
Yeah, no,
which,
I mean,
which I also quite
no
like.
No problem.
But I mix and match between them, to be honest. Can I ask you about fats while I'm on the subject? Because, as you know, my very first book was on fats and oils. In fact, I think I came to the Institute to talk about it 30 years ago. What's your view on rapeseed? Because we know that seed oils in general are pro-inflammatory. And, you know, we should be switching to things like olive oil or using ghee or coconut oil or whatever.
Yes.
And then rapeseed, you know, does have a much better nutritional profile in terms of its split with monounsaturates and polyunsaturates, although it is highly processed and...
Yeah. I mean, I don't use it myself, but it's let's say it's better. And right now in the nutritional world, I mean, things are very monopolar. And right now there's lots of people who are very anti-omega-6, partly because it is true that most people's diets are like 20 times more omega-6 than omega-3. And what happens is to turn both omega-3 and omega-6 into the good stuff, you need enzymes. The enzymes get used up on the omega-6. So you can't make your omega-3 work. That's kind of effectively what's happening.
Yeah.
So generally, I eat tahini, which is anything in a hot climate like sesame sunflower is omega-6. Mm-hmm. So I have tahini generally on nuts. I'm going walnuts, pecans. I eat almonds. They're terribly good for minerals, not very high in fats. Brazil nuts are good. I eat them, but, you know, not as a sort of particular focus. I use, you know, really good quality olive oil. It has a little bit of omega-6. I'll tell you something about olive oil that, I mean, it triggers a thought here, which is called oleic acid. My friend, Professor Michael Crawford, who's director of the Institute of Brain Chemistry at the Chelsea and Westminster campus, what they do there is they've been looking at pregnant women's fats in their blood. And what they find is if a woman who is pregnant does not get enough omega-3, their body produces a type of oleic acid, which is what's in olive oil, which becomes a ineffective filler or packer for their baby's brain. And they can tell you that that baby is going to have neurodevelopmental problems. So, you know, we've got to realize that this big increase in autism, this ADHD and so on.
Absolutely. Where does that come from?
Part of it is
change in brain fats.
It's driven in pregnancy. And of course, we want to do the best we can for every child that we can, but some of it is going to be set. For example, the homocysteine that we mentioned, which should be, well, certainly below 10, above 10, you've got brain shrinkage, but ideally 7. In relation to aging, as in your book, below, I think, 7.3. Above 7.3, you get chromosomal changes. So we can say below 7 is ideal. Now, in one study, they looked at pregnant women's homocysteine levels, and they found that 8 years on in the children of those women who had a homocysteine of 9, which is not at all uncommon, their child was more disruptive, less able to concentrate, you know, more depressed, and so on. So these four horsemen, the B vitamins, the brain fats, and you know, so we... Brain fats, omega-3, vitamin D, phospholipids, B vitamins, absolutely critical. And by the way, folate, we were talking B6, B12, folate. Folate is in greens, as in foliage. So the more greens you eat, the more nuts and seeds and beans you eat, the better. So that you can actually eat.
And what's the difference between folic acid and folate?
Well, folic acid is a stable synthetic source of folate. So it's
been, is it as easily absorbed though?
It's very easily absorbed. And what actually, amazingly, the Food Standards Agency funded a study, quite rare, which took people and gave them a measured amount of broccoli to give them, let's say, 100 microgram or whatever of folate, a synthetic cheap folic acid supplement, same amount, and compared the effect on lowering homocysteine. Now, you and I would like to say the food was better. Actually, the cheap synthetic folic acid lowered homocysteine 1.7 times more effectively. Now, there are some forms of supplemental folic acid or folate called methylfolate, which is sort of perhaps a bit better and a bit safer. And the reason why I say safe is that while generally having more folic acid is good for health in many respects, what we've learned is that, and well, normally is very anti-cancer. If someone has precancerous cells, for example, polyps in the colon, and supplements a lot of folic acid, it actually, because it helps growth, it actually helps the thing to grow. So you get a negative effect of too much folic acid supplemental if you have a precancerous condition.
Okay.
But the methylfolate, you don't get that effect with.
Ah, okay.
That is
I do notice on some vitamin packs it says it's the methyl form.
Yeah, it's been methyl, a little
cobalamin.
Well, methylcobalamin is... When we talk about homocysteine, by the way, we're measuring methylation. Methylation is a reaction that is occurring a billion times every 2 seconds in your brain and body. For example, we get this idea, you know, like the BRCA cancer gene. Half of women with the BRCA gene will get breast cancer. The other half won't. Why? Your genes are like dimmer switches. They can be turned up, they can be turned down. What turns them up or down? The answer is this process called methylation. Methylation depends on B vitamins. So when you see methyl B12, which is the methyl cobalamin, or methylfolate, which is the methyl, you're actually putting in some of these little workers. So you've got vitamin plus worker. So it's definitely better. But at the end of the day, I mean, for example, you can inherit, 20% of people do, a variation of a gene called ApoE. And a gene is the instruction to make something, an enzyme, for example, in the body. ApoE gene controls ApoE enzymes that control how you deal with fat. If you have the variation, ApoE4, technically your risk of Alzheimer's is about 5% higher. But if you change your diet or supplement, it's irrelevant. So an example of this last year, the British Medical Journal, fantastic study, 29,000 people. Those who ate a healthy diet had 11 times less risk for developing dementia, Alzheimer's actually, than those who didn't. Of course, they measured ApoE4. Did it make a difference to the outcome? No difference at all. So this is not a causative gene. It's, if you like, a wobble. And it just means you need to work a little bit harder.
Right, right. Aren't there some gene expressions that can make you not so receptive to methylated B vitamins?
Yes, absolutely. And that, and for those people, the methyl, cobalamin or methylfolate may work better. But at the end of the day, and of course, we can have DNA tests and nothing wrong with it and so on, and sort of find out your kind of personality from a biological point of view. At the end of the day, the only way to know if you're doing methylation or not is to measure your homocysteine, your blood
homocysteine. So that, and presumably that will change. That's trackable. So you can do the test, the little pinprick blood test, and then do it again in 6 months' time.
Well, I met a man in South Africa and he came up to me at a talk and he said, I'm brain dead. I mean, I keep losing my car in a multi-story car parks. I've got no energy. I've got no concentration. Sex drive does not exist. I measured his homocysteine and it was 110. Above 10, you have brain shrinkage.
Gosh, 110?
Yeah.
Wow.
I told him to eat more beans and greens and fish and eggs and take a homocysteine lowering supplement. And, and there's quite a few that are really good. And then measured him again 6 months later and it had dropped to 9.
From 110.
Yeah.
So he was, 6 months.
And he said, I am just so full of energy. Now I exercise every morning because I wake up completely alert. I've never felt this alert. And then he started to tell me about his new young girlfriend, but I didn't want to go there.
I was going to say, one of the things that I've been looking at is the role of hormones and testosterone.
And
particularly testosterone for women.
Yes.
Only prescribed on the NHS, unfortunately, for lack of libido.
Yeah.
Because that's considered the only, the patriarchal medical society, I think, in the past deemed that the only reason that women can have access to it. But of course, we have testosterone receptors in the brain.
Of course.
And helping with memory loss and word recall and cognitive function, replacing with testosterone. Do any of these nutrients have a bearing on our hormones and, testosterone, for example, in the brain?
Absolutely. And in a sense, to enable us to not miss out any really big pieces, I'm just going to quickly run through the 8 and we'll come back to them. So we've done brain fats, we've done B vitamins. Mm-hmm. I'd love to talk a bit more about sugar. And then we have antioxidants, and then we have healthy gut, and then we have active body exercise, active mind, social, intellectual, and then we have, in our system, we call it sleep and calm, so stress and sleep.
Yes.
Now, what is terribly sad, and I don't know why, because the science is fantastic, is the biggest problem for women as they approach the menopause and thereafter. The biggest problem is lack of progesterone.
Yes.
And progesterone, from progesterone, we can make everything. We can make the estrogens, we can make DHEA, there's an anti-aging hormone, we can make testosterone and so on. And basically what happens is progesterone puts the brakes on adrenaline. So one of the things that is occurring is that women who lack progesterone, estrogen obviously goes down as well, but progesterone is the sort of primary driver, is they get adrenalized. So things that they used to be able to cope with, they can't cope with. So they become more stressed, more anxious, more moody, more
anxiety.
Angry,
you know,
more twitchy, more leg twitches, peeing more, a very common thing.
Yeah.
And they're sort of over-adrenalized. So we know, I mean, it's quite fascinating. If you want to turn off a panic attack, there are two ways to do it. The first is to trigger the diving reflex, going back to the idea that we are Homo panicus. Stick your head in a basin of cold water, hold your breath.
I've tried that. It really works.
It does.
and if you put ice cubes in the water, it makes your skin absolutely glow as well. It's brilliant. Yeah.
It's why, you know, we met on a little island off Kenya, and I love to just dive into the water, swim underwater, and it switches off adrenaline. It switches off that stress reaction. And that's why these people do this, you know, this diving for this euphoria that they feel. That's method number one. Method number two is to rub transdermal progesterone cream onto thin skin, like inner arm. And that takes about 15 minutes, but it actually switches off the adrenaline. And we know that too much adrenal, it's not just adrenaline, but cortisol, which is a long-acting adrenal hormone, ages the brain. Mm-hmm. And then we know that sleep, there's a sort of magic number, which is hovers seven, you know, plus or minus half an hour. Mm-hmm. But basically, you know, after any activity, I mean, what an animal does after a walk is it goes to sleep. Because coming back to Michael Crawford and all those photons hitting your eye, stimulating the brain, all the thoughts we have all the time, admittedly, most of them are repeats. All that activity, which is hitting your brain cells and wiggling through all that omega-3 and so on, is sort of causing damage, a little bit like when your car's running, it kind of creates some stress. And then at night, you repair it. You reload all your brain cells. And that's what sleep does. It's actually recovery from the brain's day activity. Mm. And that's why it's absolutely vital. So sleep and stress resilience, really important. And melatonin.
I mean, seriously, Patrick, we could go on for hours. But can I have a quick take from you on sugar? Because that is key, isn't it?
Well, what I will tell you is in adolescents who have sugar problems, metabolic syndrome, we already see the same areas of brain shrinking as in Alzheimer's. We already...
In adolescents?
Yeah. And in China, the youngest age of a non-genetic Alzheimer's diagnosis is age 19. And by middle age, you can have an apparently normal glucose level, but high end of normal. And that has already cranked up your risk for Alzheimer's by 14.5% already. So basically, we need healthy brain cells, think omega-3 and B vitamins and phospholipids. Mm-hmm. We need a clean supply of fuel, not just glucose, but also what we call ketones from fat. Very, very important.
Yep.
We need plenty of antioxidants, and that's what you get in your fruit and veg and herbs and spices, because they, like vitamin C, really important, because they clean up the mess of oxidation of your energy metabolism. And then you're really, you know, going to fire. Your brain is going to work extremely well.
Patrick, your book is brilliant. Remind us the title and congratulations on publication. We share the same publication day.
I'm very excited.
25th of April.
You and my book are going to be the hottest topic.
They are going to be the hottest. And I'm quite happy to be releasing at the same time, because I'm releasing in hardback, you're releasing in paperback. So we can both top the respective charts without fear of upsetting the other.
Absolutely. And by the way, sort of in a way, competition is good, but also so is failing, because what we learn is that it's in the brain is you want to do something that you're not very good at, like learn a new musical instrument, learn a language, you know, do something you're not very good at. In terms of exercise, you want to do something uneven, like, you know, walking in hills or dancing.
I'm doing that this summer. I'm going with my boyfriend. We're going hiking in the Dolomites, first time ever.
Fantastic.
I've had to buy a harness and some cabinieri clips. I'm terrified.
Brilliant.
Anyway.
I've just graduated. I've now a paraglider pilot license.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
I'm 66 and, you know, I'm jumping off mountains. It's sort of scary, and I've had to pass a meteorology exam, an air law exam, and aerodynamics. So out of my comfort zone. I'm a nutritionist, you know. The book's called Upgrade Your Brain, and I've had such a great opportunity over the last 10 years to study with amazing professors. And then what we're launching on May the 15th globally mm-hmm. with all these professors
yeah.
is called Alzheimer's Prevention Day.
Well, we will support you and cover that across Lizelle Wellbeing social media channels. It's hugely important. And the name of the website for people to go and get all these tests, because I think it's so fascinating. Everyone's going to want to rush to it now.
Yeah. Well, the tests are on foodforthebrain.org. Mm-hmm. Do look up alzheimersprevention.info.
Mm-hmm. I will.
And then the book is there to support that information.
Amazing. Patrick, it was a delight to bump into you on the beach in Lamu. Even more of a pleasure to have an hour of your time today. Thank you so much. I hope that we can continue the conversation because it's just so, so important.
Thank you for sharing this important message.
Oh, Patrick, thank you so much for that. And yes, watch this space on the bookseller book charts to see what happens at the end of the month and right the way throughout May, of course, as well. Well, I do hope that you feel empowered to know that we're more in control of our futures than perhaps we might have thought. Do let me know what you think by sending me an email, or you can even voice note us now. And that is at podcast@lizellewellbeing.com. Or you can find us on Instagram at Lizelle Wellbeing, and I am there personally at Lizelle Me. And we do love always receiving your messages and your thoughts and your comments and your feedback, like this from Maxine, who writes, "Really enjoyed your latest podcast around food and cancer. It took me back to the chemotherapy ward where I received treatment for breast cancer and seeing the trolley laden with sweet so-called treats, ! We were told to eat whatever we wanted. I wanted to do whatever I could to improve my chances, so began looking into foods that would help. It's definitely an area that needs further investigation. You are the woman to do it." Well, thank you for your confidence in that, Maxine. I was really delighted to be joined by Sheila Dillon. If you haven't listened to that episode, do please take a listen. She talks about her own experience with cancer and, of course, her wide knowledge and experience in the world of food and farming as well. Well, I will tell you now that I'm going to be having a similar conversation about just how powerful lifestyle choices are, but focusing on diabetes in a couple of weeks' time. You will want to listen to that one. So make sure that you're following the podcast wherever you are listening to this right now, Apple, Spotify, wherever. That way you will always know when a new episode is available. Until the next week then, go very well. Goodbye. The Lizelle Wellbeing Show is presented by me, Lizelle, and is produced by Anushka Tate for Fresh Air Production, with additional production support from Ellie Smith.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.